Welcome to the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening again this week. There have been a lot of adjectives describing Donald Trump's election as the 45th president of the United States. Unexpected, historic, unprecedented, significant. While America has experienced the peaceful transition between presidents 44 times, there has never been a president-elect quite like Donald Trump. For his supporters, including the 4.6 million Floridians who voted for him, Trump represents a change, not just a change in which political party controls the White House, but a repudiation of decades of the political class on both sides of the aisle. It's clear in talking with Trump voters that some of them saw him as a protest vote. Others looked at Trump, though, as a reaffirmation of their ideal America, strong, capable, decisive, resolute. They voted to make America great again because they don't think America is great. And they've experienced it in stagnant paychecks, higher living expenses, temporary jobs, and widening income gaps. Hillary Clinton, in her concession speech, admitted as much.
We have seen that our nation is more deeply divided than we thought.
Of course, she was speaking there as the electoral loser of a hard-fought and long campaign. Neither Clinton nor Trump received half of the votes cast in the election, illustrating just how divided voters are across the country, and especially here in Florida, divided about their leader, divided on issues like the economy, jobs, trade, and taxes. Neither Donald Trump nor Hillary Clinton received a majority of the votes cast in Florida. Trump's winning margin was fewer than 120,000 votes. That's less than two Hard Rock stadiums filled to capacity. Listen to how South Florida voters described their reactions to the election results to us.
I was in shock.
First, I was shocked.
Excited.
Surprising.
I'm very surprised at the results.
I was very happy.
This was a covert election.
I think we're experiencing the essence of democracy.
We spoke with whites and blacks, men and women, a Hispanic, retirees, a business owner, workers, someone unemployed, someone underemployed, Republicans, Democrats, and independents. Some voted for Trump, others supported Clinton, like Ellen Walker. Now, we met her in Wilton Manors about 6 weeks before Election Day on the closing night of a play she was producing with her company, Pigs Do Fly. Back then, this is how she described her politics.
I am a lifelong liberal.
So there was never a doubt in her mind who she was going to vote for. She didn't waver. And now she's learning to live with the new political reality in America.
I just thought, okay, we're entering into a new sphere. Everything is new. Anything can happen good. It could happen bad. And one of the things I realized is nobody wanted business like usual, not even bad business like usual. Nobody wanted to continue business as usual.
Certainly not Andy Haraldson. He is a part-time English instructor at Miami-Dade College. When we first spoke with him back in late September, he described himself as politically pragmatic.
I tend to look at things from a practical matter and also from, you know, a matter of that would apply to my experience also.
That was 6 weeks before Election Day. That practicality led Haraldson to the Trump camp. He was one of the almost 334,000 voters in Miami-Dade County who supported Donald Trump. Trump lost Miami-Dade, though, but he more than made up for it elsewhere in Florida, where voters felt the same way Haraldson does.
I'm glad that he won. I'm excited that Donald Trump won because he represents, to me, a change. And so I'm kind of interested to see what's going to come next.
What kind of change does he represent to you?
He's not a career politician. He's a businessman. And so this is the way I see it, that he's going to look at things more pragmatically than a career politician would. I'm going to sound opinionated here, but I think that a career politician is someone who's going to more exploit a problem, whereas a businessman is going to look more for solutions. I think this is going to create problems between Donald Trump and the rest, and you know, most of the people he's going to be working with in Washington. Maybe his crew, depends on who he brings on board, but you know, he's the kind of guy. Just from the way he talks, he's not a politician. I've had some of my students at school have said, Trump doesn't sound like a politician. I said, he's not a politician. He's a businessman. And he's not going to, you know, talk in that politically polished voice and, you know, with the gestures and the timing, you know, that the politicians, you know, get that rhythm into their voice. He's not going to do any of that.
What are the solutions and the problems that those solutions are geared toward are you looking forward most to hear from a Trump administration?
Well, I hope that he can control immigration, because I think that any nation has to control immigration in order to so that the its citizens can get better pay. Basically, if you're gonna invite a huge population of people into the country who are willing to work for lower wages, well, then of course, why would any businessman want to pay more? So I think it's particularly low wage people. I think that they might do that. That might do better. And I believe that people have to earn more money. I mean, that's a big problem that I think that it gets to the heart and soul of things. And I'm kind of blunt about saying this. I think that there's a lot of people who are earning a lot of money who have to earn less, and there's a lot of people who aren't earning enough money who have to earn more. And this has to be voluntary. I'm not looking for a government to come in and start regulating pay. This has to be voluntary. To me, it's a matter of common sense and just a practical approach to things. It's not practical to pay people such a little bit that they can't afford to buy homes, or it's not practical to charge so much for homes that people can't buy them. So whether or not Donald Trump can affect all these changes in 4 years, I know he said a lot of things that, he'd made the promises that all presidents make, candidates make. They make these grandiose promises to change, and I don't know how much of that he can do. But if he can work a couple of things, I think that he can kind of make some changes in the economy that will be better for the United States. Instead of, thinking of the United States as part of a global community, I think that it's that we should think of what's best for our Americans in the United States instead of what's best for the global community.
There's been plenty of conversation even leading up to the election and in the hours immediately after the election results were clear for President-elect Trump, that the media got it wrong, pollsters got it wrong, and career politicians got it wrong. They weren't listening to the silent majority, to borrow a phrase from a couple of generations ago, politically speaking. What was it that all of those conventional wisdom institutions, do you think, got wrong?
Wishful thinking, maybe? Hmm. People, there are people who, I think, there's people in probably in government, I could understand that maybe they're afraid of Donald Trump.
Is there something in your experience that has led you to vocalize your excited anticipation for a Trump administration that you feel wasn't being reflected in the media coverage or the policy debate or even the character debate of this election cycle?
Just that Trump is different. He's something different. He's not. If we're complaining about government, we can't keep electing the same people. A career politician who's been in governments going back into the 1980s. Those aren't the people we want. So, when people ask me, I tell people I voted for Donald Trump, and the biggest reason I voted for him is because he's not a career politician. He's not a politician. We need to change the government. This is how you do it. When you're talking about change in the government, this is it. So here's change put right in front of people. When Donald Trump comes up and says, and acts like, he's not a politician, or doesn't act in the traditional ways that we expect politicians to act. Well, yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for. Someone who's going to break that mold and not observe those traditions that we come to expect when we think of the word president. This is how they talk. This is what they say. So, no, Donald Trump's not that any of that.
Donald Trump certainly broke with convention significantly during the election cycle, saying things that previous presidential candidates have never said. You're smiling here as I'm going to lead up to this question. Some Trump supporters have said we are listening to the spirit of what candidate Trump said, not necessarily the specifics of what candidate Trump promised. For instance,
some of the things that Donald Trump said made Muslim, me cringe.
A Muslim ban, building a wall on the U.S.-Mexican border. He said many offensive things regarding women, both as a candidate and as we heard on some captured off-camera comments in decade or so ago, prior to him being a political candidate. Extremely offensive things, bragging about sexual assault. So as a Trump supporter, Andy, how do you reconcile those kinds of things with, again, your excited anticipation for a Trump administration?
I'll just say this. I was in the United States Navy. I was on board a United States naval vessel. And if people had been walking around on that ship, recording what the sailors, our conversations, and this was including naval officers, and none of us were bad men, you know, we were all good guys, but there was a lot of talk that certainly we would not want our mothers or our girlfriends or our wives to hear. If they did hear it, they would probably think poorly of us and wonder about our character. But it's just talk. I don't think some of the things that Donald Trump said have made me cringe. I'm not so much that he said it, because, you know, people say things, you know, if someone follows you around with a microphone and they're going to catch you saying things. But and also Donald Trump's not, he wasn't careful at all. He didn't try and restrain himself. And I certainly would have, you know, as much as I appreciate the fact that, okay, he's not your standard politician. He's not going to come in, and put on the, you know, the polished political affect when he speaks. But at the same time, some of the things he said, in my opinion, went overboard. That doesn't make him unfit to be president. I'll put it that way. I don't believe that Donald Trump wants to fully ban Muslims from the country. I think what he wants to do is be a lot more careful about what Muslims that we let in. Building the wall, if that's what it takes to secure the borders, any nation has to have secure borders. You can't have the borders wide, you know, just wide open where everybody can come across. And that makes perfect sense to me. If, you know, entire populations of people can come across a country's borders, it's going to have more than likely a negative effect on that country's economy, particularly if these are people who, you know, are going to drive wages down. So build a wall. That's a 2,000-mile border, I think, with Mexico. Is he really going to do that? I don't know.
We'll Does it see. Matter to you? In other words, are you going to judge part of the success or failure of a Trump administration, whether or not part of that wall or all that wall gets built in the next 4 years?
I'm gonna look for the judge the success or failure on whether or not the Donald Trump controls immigration more effectively than it's being controlled now.
As a Trump supporter, Andy, as you look forward to the next 4 years, what impact do you think President-elect Trump may have on your personal economy, on your paycheck, on the economy of the community that you reside in?
If there's going to be an effect on my paycheck that a president is going to make, Donald Trump is more likely to make it. We have to find ways to pay people as much as possible, and you don't want the government to come in here and be telling you what salaries and wages should be. This has to be voluntary. It has to be as a matter of practical common sense. Speaking pragmatically, people have to earn more. If people aren't earning enough to pay for, you know, to buy homes, or if homes are being driven, priced up out of range, if people can't afford to buy homes, if people can't afford to save for retirement, if people can't afford to buy health care, you know, then they have to be paid more. People aren't earning enough. There's some people who are earning way too much, and there's a lot of people who aren't earning enough. And I really think that is at the heart, that's if not the central problem, very close to the central problem that that's creating a lot of social friction, you know, in this country.
Andy Haroldson, instructor at Miami-Dade College and a Donald Trump voter in South Florida. Still to come as Voter Voices continues, the worries of a black voter here after the Trump win.
It feels like we're going back to a time where it's going to be okay to persecute black people. And I'm really worried because I'm black. I have children that are black. I have a husband that is black. So that scares me.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, Voter Voices. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Today we're hearing from voters, Trump voters and Clinton voters, men and women across racial and ethnic lines, listening to their hopes and worries about themselves, their families, their communities, and their country after this election. When we met Ann Reese in late September, she told us every election is important and said she always voted. It was a rare, quiet midday for her when we spoke in her home. Her husband was at work, one child was in school, the other in daycare. She had the day off. And the issue for her 6 weeks ago?
The economy, making more money. I mean, making more money is always more important to me because at the end of the day, I need to take care of my family.
Reese was born in Jamaica, came to South Florida when she was 13. She's 48 now, and she is a citizen. This election had many racial overtones to it, certainly, from Donald Trump's support for racial profiling by police to the official newspaper of the KKK endorsing him. Now, Trump courted the minority vote, particularly the black vote, with appeals like this one he made in September in Miami.
I've been saying it, and I'll say it openly, and some people like it, and some people don't like it, and I don't really care. What do you have to lose? I will fix it. I'm going to fix it. We're going to fix our inner cities. We're going to make them safe. We're going to bring jobs back. So to the African-American people within the community, what do you have to lose?
Nearly 90% of black voters supported Hillary Clinton for president, although in smaller total numbers than voted for President Obama. We spoke with Ann Reese 2 days after Election Day as she juggled both her young kids late in the afternoon.
I'm still going through a myriad of emotions. You can put it, at first I was shocked. I never thought that it was going to be the results that we now have. So I would say that I'm slowly going through some emotions. I'm shocked, and then I'm afraid. And right now, I think I'm angry. It might be the five stages of grief I'm going through. I don't know. I'm not sure. I've been wearing black for 2 days, too, so.
Do you normally wear black?
Once in a while, but not 2 days in a row, I don't think.
And that's on purpose?
That's how I felt yesterday when I woke up. I felt it was just very grim and sobering.
Tell me what you're angry about.
I think I started to get angry after I got to work and I saw the clusters of people that were having some little, almost like celebration. And it was just clusters, and then they would be quiet. They would get quiet when you walk by or something like that. I think I started to get angry then because there were some people that I thought were they're people that I like. I'm not going to say that I don't like them anymore, but right now I'm just very angry at them.
And tell me what you are scared of, what you're frightened about.
I'm scared about what's going to happen to minorities, especially black people. It feels like a reversal almost. And it feels like we're going back to a time where it's going to be okay to persecute black people. And I'm really worried because I'm black. I have children that are black. I have a husband that is black. So that scares me.
What would you like to tell the Trump supporters or even the president-elect about your concerns about your race under his administration?
Well, every time he speaks about African-Americans, he mentioned the inner cities almost as if every African-American live in the inner city, which is kind of insulting. You know, I've never been to the inner city, but I believe that there are more than black people that live there. And I'm not saying that I live in an upscale community or anything, but we live in a pretty decent neighborhood. It's not the inner city. Not every black people live in an inner city. And every time they asked him a question about someone or black people, he mentioned the inner cities. And then another thing that was of concern to me was talking about people getting just stopped and profiled for no reason other than, no one says it, but other than their color. And then he's talking about this law and order that it's he will bring back stop and frisk and all of that stuff. This is all things that he talked about in the debates. And that's scary to me that someone can just pull you over and say, let me see what's in your pocket, let me see what's in your bag, or whatever, just for the reason that they're the color that they are. And that didn't really, I mean, when we first spoke, it was mostly an economic issue for me, but I'm thinking somewhere this was always there. This is something that we deal with every day, and I am truly afraid again. And what I would like to say to him is, you know, not every black people live in an inner city, and most of us are law-abiding citizens, and not only black people commit crimes, you know, and please see us as the people that we are, because we have families and we love them just like you love your families and just like you love your kids who seem to love you back. We love our children too. And please don't start talking about things like stop and frisk and, you know, because it makes us feel a little bit vulnerable.
How do you feel about your community, your neighborhood? And South Florida, has that changed at all because of the result of this election and your articulated concern now, which is clearly focused on race as opposed to some of the economic issues we spoke about, which you were focused on prior to the election?
My immediate community, no, not so much. But to me, it feels like there's a little bit more subvert racism even amongst the people that I work with. And as I said, I think I'm still going through a myriad of emotions right now, and maybe I'm even going to regret this interview, but it's what I'm feeling right now. I don't know how I'm going to feel tomorrow. I'm hoping I'm going to feel better about things, but it's a process that I'm going through right now, and this is what I'm feeling right now. I'm sorry.
Ann Reese in North Miami Beach. Still to come with voter voices, a female Democrat remained steadfast while an independent Hispanic man turned to Trump.
He did everything wrong.
The problems in the inner cities and the problem of education. So I started to warm up to the idea of liking Donald Trump.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking with voters today, hearing their hopes, their dreams, their worries about a Trump administration. You can join that conversation on social media. It's on Twitter. At WLRN is our handle. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Ellen Walker has been an actor for many years. She's retired now from being a lobbyist for the Miami-Dade County government, allowing her the chance to act and produce theater more often. After being raised and spending her working years in Miami, she moved to Hollywood so she would be more centrally located for her acting gigs in Southeast Florida. She's a self-described lifelong liberal. And when I asked her how she felt about the election, she answered with an actor's flair.
You mean... after I got up from the floor. shocked. I knew at 9:30 that night when they mentioned Florida, and I knew that when I saw all the urban areas essentially went for Hillary Clinton, as was expected. What was not expected is all of the rural areas came out in droves to vote for him, and that equalized the vote. And with that, I said to myself, and then North Carolina, the same thing, I said, he's won. That's what I said to myself.
And what'd you think?
I was in shock. I was in shock. He did everything wrong. He didn't follow any rules. He didn't have a ground game the day before. He insulted people. He made tons of mistakes. And so he kept on plugging along, and he won.
When we spoke with Ellen 2 days after Election Day, she was sitting next to Juan Tomas Sanchez. 5 weeks earlier, Sanchez told us he was still undecided who he'd vote for president. He was focusing on trade, taxes, regulation, and the environment, trying to make up his mind.
It's confusing because both candidates are wrong in most issues.
But Sanchez did make up his mind, as he told me and Ellen Walker.
When we met here a month and a half ago, I was undecided. But then I read a couple of things that I thought were very interesting. One on the education issue that really explained that maybe Trump not being so close to the unions and the unions being so adamant to really bring some freedom to the education system, see if it could be improved. I said, well, that would be one good point if Trump gets elected. Then I saw Trump talking about the inner cities, and it also made sense to me. And I said, yeah, I'm looking at two of the biggest problems that in my mind this nation has, you know, the problems in the inner cities and the problem of education. So I started to warm up to the idea of liking Donald Trump, but more as a protest vote, because I was sure, like everybody else, that he would never win.
As you began to see the results on Tuesday night and began to realize that your protest vote may have been cast for the president-elect of the United States.
Yes, I was happy. I had no regrets.
I wouldn't know what it's like to be undecided.
You described yourself as a lifelong liberal.
Lifelong liberal Democrat and passionate about that. And the Democratic Party has the principles I believe in, helping people who can't help themselves, standing up for minorities that haven't always been stood up for. And these are my principles. So there was never even an iota of a doubt in my mind that I would support Hillary Clinton. So I had my mind made up. But I did begin to see that the growth in the country has been with NPA, no party affiliation. And many people in the country, Hispanics, blacks, millennials, have lost faith in the party system. And I can understand that. So I'm so used to my way, you know what I mean? The Republicans are used to theirs. But here's this burgeoning thing of something else. And that something else has been Donald Trump. Of course, even though I'm still shocked that Hillary Clinton lost, I want him to be successful, because if he's successful, I'm happy too.
Juan, what would you say to Ellen? What was it that appealed to you about Donald Trump?
There were many things in him that I hated. But when, you know, those two issues, when I saw that he made sense in education as an alternative for education, that he had an alternative for the inner cities. I think nobody has an alternative on foreign policy. You know, what's going on in the Middle East and China, Mexico, whatever. No one has a crystal ball on how to deal with those issues. But I thought that those two issues really made me decide that there was an opportunity there.
Do you share Juan's sense of optimism, even though you supported Secretary Clinton?
You know, I was thinking that while Juan was talking. There is a chance for optimism. I'm certainly not crying warts and pestilence and crying in my beer. I mean, I was very bleary-eyed yesterday, but it was mostly from, oh, my God. But I have a couple of friends that are, you know, the usual stuff. Even Obama said if everybody who said they were going to leave the country when he got elected had left, we wouldn't have hardly anybody here. So that doesn't happen. But I guess I do feel optimistic because change will happen. It's not going to be all one way, as Juan just said. And it could bring some interesting good things. Could be.
Each of you represent
some groups that were in focus for the campaigns this election cycle. Ellen, the female vote, the gender issue. Juan, Cuban-American vote, the Hispanic vote. How do you react to how those groups were portrayed, how you and your community were targeted by the campaigns and courted in some degree?
I think, you know, Cuban-Americans of my age and mostly my philosophy, we are facing out, but also there is a reality when you're an immigrant and another reality when you've been an immigrant for 20 years and then you're worried about who may be here competing for the jobs that you want to compete. But you change your mind, you know. One is you're an immigrant on the first 5 years, and another one is when you've been here 20 years and you thought of secure your path in a certain industry or in a certain trade.
Well, Trump did not speak to women, period. I mean, if he did, it was a pejorative. Hillary, just by virtue of being a successful, outspoken, accomplished woman, is something that women can aspire to. I think she did speak to that.
Ellen, as somebody who didn't support the president-elect, how will you gauge and judge his administration?
There are plenty of extremely talented, mature, focused women out there. I'd like to see if he appoints any to his cabinet.
I like to see him being a chameleon and getting the best out of both parties to get good ideas going.
Juan Tomas Sanchez, a Trump supporter. Ellen Walker, who voted for Hillary Clinton. Two voices of two voters here in South Florida. Still to come, listening more, a worker, a business owner, and an unemployed voter.
We have a discussion that's not normal, not a normal political conversation in this election.
This election was about the people. They were fed up with everything that has taken place.
I think you'll see an allegiance to shareholders.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. It's Voter Voices today. You can lend your voice. What are your hopes or worries about a Trump administration? Join that conversation online at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. This election, like most elections, was a reflection, certainly, about the economy, or more accurately, the direction Americans want the economy to go in for their own prosperity and that of the country. We spoke to an employee,
Satya Vedantam, Pembroke Pines, Florida.
A business owner,
Jim Engleton, Bay Harbor Islands, Florida.
And an unemployed South Floridian looking for work,
Jay Pellis, Coral Springs, Florida.
We wanted to hear more about how they now see that financial future for themselves, for their community, under a president-elect Trump.
At a high level, we have a discussion that's not normal, not a normal political conversation in this election. Right. So it's kind of set a precedence. And my fear is maybe this may be followed in the future elections, and which is not to my taste.
Jay, how about for you?
I've got fears about what may happen in this country in the next couple of years.
What are those fears?
Well, what I see is selfishness, if you will. You hear about Donald Trump, and all of his campaign headquarters had pictures of Donald Trump and talking of repealing the Health Care Act. Selfishness, I don't care about your health, I care about my health. And I see that happening, people not wanting manufacturing exported. Yet manufacturing in Mexico still does help this country. But I tend to fear that there will be a backlash of people wanting to have things manufactured out of the country. And that could result in less things being manufactured here, or things being manufactured here and just simply becoming more expensive and harder to purchase.
Jim, guide us through your thoughts here as you absorb the election results.
I did not think at any time Hillary Clinton would win. As I travel the United States, I get around and speak with a lot of people. And to be totally candid with you, this was a covert election, if you will. What I mean by that is that not too many people really wanted to say who they were really supporting. This election was about the people. They were fed up with everything that has taken place, and they wanted to send a clean, clear, loud message. And they did not want to elect a politician this time. They wanted a business person. There is going to be a level of bring back commerce. We have unemployment figures that are skewed right now. And if you're 50 years or older, been out of work since the year 2009, you are not counted in the unemployment and the employment figures.
Not in the headline number, but in the what's called the U6 number, you are included in the total unemployment figure.
But the U6 is not used as much as the frontline number because it suits the White House.
But it does exist. But it is out there for public consumption, and we have seen both candidates point to a total unemployment number. And Tom, it has been dropping as well.
I agree. Tom, you're the first one to even mention that. So that's the beautiful thing about this, you know. And to that point, you will see some protectionisms. You're going to see the TPP roll back a little bit. I mean, regulatorily, you're going to see
the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I believe that Dodd-Frank will be repealed in the United States too, helping the banking community and business community.
The financial regulations that were passed after the Great Recession. Jay Pelas, let me bring you in as someone who's experienced the unemployment market during the Obama administration.
I'm mostly involved in the nonprofit sector, and I tend to think now that the nonprofit sector that relies on grants, either government grants or private foundation grants, are going to see a bit of a withdrawal of funds being available. And that frightens me as somebody who is trying to right now find full-time employment working in the nonprofit sector.
A lot of what we heard on what matters to voters over the last 18 months of this campaign cycle was similar to what we hear during a usual campaign cycle, which is it's about jobs, it's about the economy, it's about pay. We heard a lot of economic anxiety voiced on the part of voters. I would like each of you to talk about how you feel after the election about that level of economic anxiety. Satya, I'll begin with you.
Okay, the last time when the government did a tax cuts followed by an unfunded wars, we ended up in the depression. And I strongly feel we are seeing those kind of signs again. So we have to be very careful about, you know, what they're going to do.
So when President-elect Trump talks about cutting the corporate tax rate from 35% down, talking about simplifying individual tax rates from 7 tax brackets to 3 tax brackets, that adds to your economic anxiety.
Perfectly. Based on what happened 8 years back. It's not something in my head. It's I experienced it.
Jay, how about from your perspective?
I think you'll see an allegiance to shareholders. And that allegiance to shareholders will hurt the American society overall and the American employee. Shareholders may be very happy. You may see stocks going up, but I don't think we'll see very much of a rise in employment. We may see a rise in entrepreneurship only because people out of necessity will have to find another way of making money.
Trump has talked about creating 25 million jobs over 10 years. Doubling the growth rate of the gross domestic product.
Yes, he has said that.
That doesn't give you confidence?
None.
Jim?
I'm a business person and have been all my life. And there are cycles I've seen where we've had over-regulation, then the word deregulation. I believe that we're going to be on the precipice of a deregulation movement. Also, I do believe that he will assist the business entrepreneur, the millennials, the startups, the incubator groups by simplifying with the Internal Revenue. If you look at the tax codes, they are – it's called confusion to the enemy is what Confucius once said.
Let me ask what you would say to Jay, who you're sitting next to, and his concerns that he voiced in regards to a Trump administration and perhaps being more shareholder friendly.
Jay, I got to tell you something. I've my business has grown to a point where several times some consultants recommended that we go public. And I said I did not want to work for earnings reports, and I declined. I would rather be a private business, give back to the community, and we have a very good record in history of doing that. To this point, I'm 60 years old. I'm called a senior citizen, which kind of bothers me to say that. But the bottom line is that I understand where he's coming from at the point of being extremely qualified, an experienced gentleman, and somebody that can give back to the community, not so much in a non-for-profit way, but to be paid, to be appreciated, to be valued, to be given benefits. All of that is needed in today's world.
And you think the Trump administration is going to create that environment more than a Clinton administration would have?
I think that having, and I'm not trying to be idealistic, but I do know that what I've heard in my travels nationally by people that were on both sides of the fence, and I mean, I've had a house divided in my own home. And
with this election.
Oh, absolutely. And I have twin daughters and a wife, and I know that they did not vote for Mr. Trump. And they gave me some awful tough looks. I cooked my own dinner. So the bottom line is that, you know, the passion was there, but some of it was, let's elect a female. And that was not the right thing.
Jay, I want you to respond.
I'm pessimistic. I'm pessimistic in looking at Trump's history.
Sayer, thoughts?
When you want somebody to progress, you have to help. We have to find common ground, work with them, and move things along.
Jim, how about you as a business owner, as an employer who has a payroll to meet every couple of weeks, is responsible not only for your own household, but the household of several others? How has this election affected your economic confidence in your own prosperity and the prosperity of your community?
The elections on the national scale were an embarrassment. Well, at the state and local level, they were an embarrassment too. You know, I traveled to Washington, and many times I'm asked, how do you live in Miami? Because we're better known as Casablanca of the United States. We have Miami moments. When are we going to drain the swamp here? We have not drained the swamp enough. Okay, we did a little takeout here in Washington. How about Miami?
Jay, as someone who is looking for work in this community, how are you approaching this?
Very tentatively right now. I tend to see a tightening of business spending right now. I think there's going to be a very cautious approach until we see what happens in January after Mr. Trump is inaugurated. And until then, I think that everybody's going to be stepping gingerly in making any kinds of big, bold steps with their businesses. So from my standpoint, I can't say that I'm optimistic for myself.
Satya, what do you think the impact is going to be on your prosperity?
Well, I don't look at a personal level at this point, but I would like to see whatever the policy that is being developed does not harm the nation as a whole. But what I don't want to believe is, okay, I give a tax cut, suddenly the growth becomes like 10% and all the problems disappear. It won't.
Satya Vedantam, Jay Pelas, and Jim Angleton. Still to come, as Voter Voices continues, forget the political punditry, listen to the voters.
This anger was not by osmosis. This anger has been brewing really for the last 16 years.
This is the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. We're featuring the voices of several South Florida voters talking about the election and some of the economic issues it reflected. Lionel Lightborn is on the front lines of it. He's a social worker in Liberty City, where he works with kids and families. He's in his mid-40s. He looks younger, but talks like a sage philosopher about this election.
I think we're experiencing the essence of democracy, which is the intimacy between a country and its citizens. The only one thing that people hate more than narcissism is nepotism or favoritism. And in this case, Clinton was perceived as the more favorable, or with the nepotism
by her being the wife of her husband. So she was the expected, we were expected to vote for her. And I think the quiet riot in this was the people that was disregarded. This anger was not by osmosis. This anger has been brewing really for the last 16 years. I knew the defining moment that Trump was going to win. I think it was the last question of the last election debate when the guy stood up, simple guy, stood up and said, what
would
do you guys
either of you name one positive thing that you respect in one another?
And when Hillary Clinton failed to answer that question, particularly as a wife, a woman, and a mother, and she allowed Donald Trump to answer that question better than her, that was a defining moment, not only for me, but a lot of Americans.
I respect his children.
I will say this about Hillary. She doesn't quit. She doesn't give up.
He answered the question more appropriately than she did. She was the candidate of ethics. She was the candidate that was going to succeed Barack Obama and what was built on already. And she dropped the ball when it came to that question. And that, not only that, that question came from a voter. When it became to extremists versus the enabler, people went with the extremists as opposed to, because all the action is with the extremists as opposed to the enabler. And I think that's what's happening in this election. That's what's going to happen in the economy. I think we're underestimating and leaving out a particular group of people. And I think it's those millennials that's going to make the change and the difference. In uncertain times, there's uncertain opportunity. So I don't see anyone as an adversary. I just see this as an opportunity to actually grow and sow some new ideas that may not have worked 8 to 10 years ago. So this may be some time for people to go and knock on, dust off some of those ideas and creations that's in their closet that may be their opportunity to actually establish new businesses. Confidence is the foundation of my growth. Welfare is psychological. Poverty is psychological. So if I let anything in any movement or the election of anyone shake me or move me, I don't expect them to do anything for me. They're just going to join me with what I was already doing. And I work in social services, so a part of my job is to keep families in their homes, to help family buy homes, et cetera. And I am my best client. So for me to say that an election of someone actually shakes my confidence is the core of my existence, and it's going to take a lot more than an election to do that.
Lionel Lightborn in his steady, hopeful, and empowering voice after the votes have been counted. Wanda Miles is our technical director. Bridget O'Brien helped this week with booking. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.